Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media, at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I hope you are well. I am here today with an episode full of bits and bobs. So I'm going to start with a success of the week and a weird dilemma of the week. Then I'm going to talk to you about what to do with those miscellaneous items that don't seem to have a home. And then I am going to give you a listener secret. Haven't done one of those for a while. Thought it was time to do another one of those. And then, as always, I am going to close out with a top tip of the week. Thank you for listening. So, my success of the week and my weird dilemma of the week. Fairly self-explanatory. Something I've done well. Something that's confused me. So, my success of the week. I deleted lots of Amazon subscribe and save items. Right, Amazon in the UK, at least, I don't know if this is an international thing, does this thing called subscribe and save, where if there are items you're going to buy again and again and again, you can subscribe to them and you get money off. So, for instance, multivitamins. I take a multivitamin every day and I buy like a tub of like 3 months of multivitamins, and so I've got it on subscribe and save. So that every 3 months it sends me a new pot. So it's one less thing I have to think about. Now, I resisted subscribe and save for ages because it's clearly a very calculated way of Amazon guaranteeing that I buy a particular thing from them. But you know what I'm like with discounts. And, you know, the mental energy of remembering certain things that you know you are definitely going to buy, it does save a bit on that. But the thing is, if you're buying something and it is subscribe and save is an option, but you don't actually want to subscribe to it, it will say, yeah, but if you use subscribe and save, you get 15% off. And that's a really hard thing to resist. So what you do I'm sure it's not just me, is you go with subscribe and save with a view to cancelling the subscribe and save later. So you get the one now with your 15% off and then don't buy it again. And so what, like a week or something before your items are due, maybe a bit longer, you can go through your list and say, I don't need that this month, or don't send me that. And so it was becoming quite a lot of work that every time one of those one-off items came up again, I was having to delay it and say, no, sorry, don't want that this month, again and again and again and again. And the risk, of course, is, well, the risk is that you don't check the list and end up with something being sent to you that you don't want or need. And the risk also is that something comes up and you wouldn't have thought to buy it, but it's quite hard to resist. So say, I don't know, a nice box of chocolates. It's an option and you think, oh, I should say, don't send me that this month. But, you know, a nice box of chocolates would be nice. And so you don't delete it from the list and you get it. Whereas if that hadn't, if you weren't subscribed to it, you would never have added it to your cart. Anyway, so my success of the week is that I went through all of my Amazon Subscribe and Save subscriptions and deleted all of the ones that were originally meant to be a one-off or that I don't use or buy anymore. And that will save me work every month in terms of having to go, you know, review what's about to come. And also, it will hopefully protect me from those spontaneous, oh, go on then, moments. My weird dilemma of the week is one of those that I would not admit to anywhere other than this podcast, I don't think. Something I have kept for so long, and even I don't know why. Quite a few years ago, I got a new fridge. My old fridge broke, and I got a new one. And so when my new fridge came, they took away the old fridge to recycle, all good. But for some reason, I decided to keep the shelf from the fridge. I don't know why I kept it. But even more bewildering is that in the, I don't know how long I've had it, 8 years I've had that fridge, I realised the other day I've still got that shelf. Why do I have a shelf from a fridge I no longer own? The shelf does not fit my new fridge. It is just there like a wire shelf for no reason at all. And yet I am having weird difficulty getting rid of it. So if you have any insight into why I'm holding on to that, do let me know. I think I am building to getting rid of it, but it's a weird one. Hoarding brains are so weird. So that is my weird dilemma this week. So before I get going on what to do with bits and bobs, I also want to say that last week or the week before, I changed my podcast hosting company. Hopefully on your end, there shouldn't have been anything noticeably different. But if there were any hiccups in last week's episode, my apologies for that, and I hope everything's been smoothed over now. I'm getting the hang of the new one at my end, and hopefully it will be a good move. So I wanted to talk this week about what to do with those miscellaneous items that don't really have a home. The thing about them is that they can be quite overwhelming in number. In a lot of homes, but especially in a hoarded home, we can have so many of these little things that don't have an obvious place to live. I'm talking things like if you've got spares of things, if you've got a set of spare keys, for instance, things like super glue. Where does the super glue live? Where do you keep your travel toiletries? Where do postage stamps live? Where do you keep your passport? Where do printer cartridges live? Those kind of things that you don't tend to have a dozen of and an obvious home for. And they can be quite confusing to deal with. Where do you put them? What do they go with? I think a lot of homes have, say, a junk drawer where that kind of stuff goes. But that can be quite chaotic. And if you're talking about hoarding, usually one drawer isn't enough for those kind of items. So you might end up with doom boxes, which I will get onto in a minute. You might end up with them just spread all over the house, so they're difficult to find. You don't quite know how to deal with them. And the thing is, they are things that we might need twice a year or once a year. And you need to be able to find them when you need them. You're keeping them mostly, ideally, because they're useful. And so you don't want to have to rebuy or do without if you can avoid it. And so if you can come up with a scheme or a system or a process for dealing with those bits and bobs, then that would help you be more efficient in your home and help you live your life more in a more streamlined way. So the first question to ask when you come across something that would come under that miscellaneous category is, can you actually get rid of it? That, as a hoarder, has to be one of the first questions you ask. Do you really need it? Do you ever use it? Do you like it? It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that what you have is an organizational problem and not a hoarding problem. I thought for so long that my problem was that I couldn't organize my stuff. If I could just get the right system, if I could just work out how categories worked, if I could just buy the right shelves or get the right box, then actually my home would be fine. It took me a long time to realize that my problem was a problem of quantity. And so when you're looking at bits and bobs and miscellaneous stuff, don't let yourself fall into the trap of thinking, of kind of skipping the "do I even need it" question. Because first and foremost, you want to be de-hoarding. You want to be getting stuff out of your home, getting stuff gone. Don't skip that question when you're looking at something and not knowing where it should live. Don't assume it's a keep, because it may be something you can get rid of. But if you do have bits and bobs that you genuinely need or really, really want to keep, hopefully the following advice that I'm going to talk about will help. So the first bit of advice is, don't fall into the trap of the doom box. Doom box apparently stands for didn't organize, only moved, but essentially it's those boxes or baskets or bags that get full of the random stuff that you don't quite know what to do with. And I think there can be a role for a doom box in a regular home, but I think if you have a tendency towards hoarding, they are kind of a disaster because they just get filled and never looked at again. And rather than having a single small doom box, we have 25 doom boxes and we don't know what's in any of them or how to find it. So don't fall into the temptation of having a box for any old miscellaneous thing that doesn't have an obvious home, because I think that leads to the same problem you've already got, just in boxes instead of spread around the house, or instead of on the floor, or instead of where things currently are. So when you've got bits and bobs that you want to keep but that don't have an obvious home, try to find themes in them. So maybe electronics go together. Maybe gift wrapping stuff goes together. Maybe instruction manuals go together. Cosmetics go together. That kind of thing. Like, I think a lot of people would not have 10 eyeliners, but they would know that their one eyeliner lived with their one lipstick, which lived with their one foundation, which lived with their one mascara. And obviously in a hoarded home, the quantities may be different. You may have 200 lipsticks. But if you think along, if you think about that, that's an example of things that are not the same, but that are on the same theme and therefore ideally kept together. And this is how we need to start thinking about bits and bobs that don't have an obvious category. Now, I know I've avoided, I'm calling it themes because I'm slightly trying to avoid the word categories, because I know a lot of us, definitely myself included, struggle to categorize things. It seems to be a feature of hoarding disorder that categorizing is inexplicably difficult for some of us. So if it helps to think about themes or groups rather than categories, then go with that. And the other thing is that these groups or themes or categories don't have to make sense to anybody other than you, or at least anybody other than you and the people who live in your home. So it may be that most people would keep tea and coffee together. But for you, let's talk about myself. I never drink coffee, not a fan of coffee. I drink plenty of tea. So it may make more sense to me to keep all my tea together and then to keep coffee in a separate place that is themed along things I get out if I have visitors, for instance. And so if I was in a position to have visitors, I would have some coffee in the house, but it wouldn't necessarily make sense to keep it in where I keep the tea, which is very accessible and by the kettle and, you know, the place it makes sense. And so that's just an example of how it's more important that these groupings work for your life and in your home. It's more important than it making some kind of abstract sense to somebody who doesn't live with you or doesn't live your life. And sometimes these bits and bobs can go in a grouping. You can kind of, there may be a category that already exists that you can slightly expand to make your bits and bobs fit into that category. So this is about, essentially, it's about like with like. I am a big advocate of putting like with like for a couple of reasons. I think that when you put all of your pairs of scissors in one place, and when you put all of your Tupperware in one place, and when you put all of your pasta bowls in one place, it has a real benefit. Firstly, it makes them a lot easier to find. You know where they are because they're all together. Secondly, you see objectively how much you have. It's hard to look at a pile of 20 pasta bowls without thinking, maybe I have too many pasta bowls. If everything is together, it's a really visual way of assessing, do I really need all of that? And the other real benefit I find is that if pasta bowls are your thing, and then you go to Sainsbury's and they have some beautiful new pasta bowls, if you can visualize your existing like with like pasta bowls, that can really help you to resist getting yet another one to add to the pile. But when you're doing bits and bobs like with like, you're doing like with like, but within categories rather than lots of the same item. So if you hoard, the quantities of stuff probably mean this isn't a one-off task. It's probably something you do on an ongoing basis. I looked up, when I was researching this episode, I looked up like how to declutter, how to organize miscellaneous items. And a lot of it was so unrelatable. It was like, gather every one of these from around your home. Get every miscellaneous bit and bob, can that be made singular? And do it all at once. And that does not work with a typical hoarder's home. My scissors are pretty organized because I get disproportionately stressed if I can't find scissors when I need them. So I have a pair of scissors in every room and I pretty much know where the scissors are in any room. So if you said to me, go and get every pair of scissors you own, I could probably do that. But that is absolutely in a minority of things I could do that with. I could do that with virtually with so few other things. If you said, get every t-shirt you own, I would not be able to. And so it is not realistic for the vast majority of hoarders to do this in one go, to get all your miscellaneous items in a pile and sort them all there and then. It's more of a having a system, coming up with a system now, so that as you continually de-hoard, when you come across these items, you know a bit more that there's a process of how to decide what to do with it. And you've started that process with these groups, with these groupings and categories and themes. So you've got a formula to work out what to do with things as you go. So don't be tempted, I would say, in the vast majority of cases, to feel any pressure to do it all at once. That's not how hoarding works.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The listener voicemail segment is going to have a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. For June, the question to answer is, what's your success of the week? Maybe you threw out your first bag or your thousandth bag. Maybe you finally got rid of that old pair of shoes or you resisted that mug in the charity shop. Or maybe you told somebody about your hoarding. You finally let a plumber into your home or you cut up your credit card. Don't let me be the only person who shares a success of the week. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message for me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for June is your success of the week. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. Now, my main difficulty with categorizing things is when things have multiple categories. That is something that always trips me up. If there's a potential of three or four categories for any one item, I get really confused. So if you have some travel laundry liquid, does that go with your suitcase or does it go with your regular laundry powder? So what I'm trying to learn to do is to go with the first one that occurs to me. If I think, where should travel laundry liquid go? If my first thought is with the suitcases, then that's where I put it. If my first thought is with the regular laundry powder, that's where I put it. The hope is that when I next need that thing, it the first category I thought of the first time round will also be the first category I thought of the second time round. This is obviously not a foolproof plan, but rather than get tripped up by, I do not know whether printer paper lives with the printer or with the stationery, if that kind of dilemma would make you just shut down and stop, then this is a way, it's one trick that might help you be able to make a decision and move forward. And so once you've started getting these themes set up, the next step is to get rid of duplicates. Even if you could justify the existence of sun cream, well, I mean, you don't need to justify the existence of sun cream. It's very good and prevents skin cancer. But you could certainly justify having sun cream. But if you categorize and realize that you have 12 bottles of it, that is the time to, what's the political word they keep using for shrinking? Rationalize. That's the time to rationalize your sun cream ownership. You may want one bottle for your bag, one bottle for the car, or one for the garden. You know, I don't know. It depends on the way you live your life. But use that phenomenon that happens when you put like to really question, okay, maybe I do need sun cream, but maybe I don't need all of these tubes of sun cream. And so by this point, you've got some themes. So maybe all your electronic stuff is together. And it's time to start thinking of places in your home that it would make sense to store that category of stuff. Now, the benefit of this theming is that it's easier to find things that are part of a category, things that are part of a group, than it is to find one-off things. And so you've got your theme, say electronics, say stationery, say gift wrapping. Where in your home would it be sensible to keep those things? Where would it make sense? So it might well be that the place to keep your printer cartridges, I would go, is that stationery or is that electronics? That would be my dilemma, I think. And so I would panic and not be able to decide and do nothing and then not be able to find them and so buy new ones anyway. So with printer cartridges, as an example, I think I would conclude that it made the most sense to keep it near the printer. And so that would be under the electronics theme. And so the next question is, where would it make sense in my home to keep this grouping of miscellaneous items? Where would it make sense in my home to keep these spare electronics? And for me, that would probably be the part of my home I use as a home office. That would be where my desk is, where the printer is. So any kind of spare phone charger cables, those printer cartridges, anything like that, printer paper probably, I think, would go for me with electronics in my home office rather than with my stationery, which is more aesthetic and pretty. So for me, it would make the most sense for printer cartridges to be with electronics and for electronics to be in my home office. So for every item, try and think like that. What grouping makes sense? And then what place makes sense for things in that grouping? And similarly to if items have multiple categories, go with the one that comes to you first. Another way to decide where to put things is, where would I look for this thing first? And again, you can't guarantee that the first place you think of to put it will be the first place you think of to look for it. But I'm finding, this is something I've been trying to do for maybe 6 months or so, I'm finding that it quite often is. My brain does quite often go to exactly the place I first thought of. And so if you're stuck as to where something should live, think, if I was looking for this, where would I look first? And along the same lines, if I was shopping for this, where would I shop? So would I go to a hardware store? Would I go to a craft shop? Would it be, if I went to a department store, which bit of the department store would I look for it? That kind of externalizes it. You're not having to make a judgment about where something lives. You're kind of thinking, where would other people categorize this? And as long as it makes sense to you, then that makes sense in your home. Some department store categories do not make sense to me. And so that wouldn't be how I categorize things in my home. But if I'm thinking, does Tupperware live in the kitchen because that's mostly where I use it? Or does it live with craft stuff because I keep some craft stuff in Tupperware? And if that is a question that threatens to trip me up, then if I think, where would it be in a department store? The Tupperware would be with the kitchen stuff. And then I think, okay, that does make sense, actually. Plus, that's where I use most of it. Then that might help me make a decision. And using this kind of approach, things are together, they're not loose, and they're themed, so it makes sense for them to be together. And they live in a place that's logical for them to live. For example, kitchen gadget instruction leaflets live in the kitchen drawer. Think about where you use things, perhaps more than where they technically belong. It might well be that you think vouchers should go with your mail because they're random bits of paper. But actually, vouchers, I would say, would make more sense to go with your wallet because you're more likely to use them when you're spending money. And it makes sense for your wallet to live with your keys because you most likely need your keys to lock your door when you leave the house to spend money. So think about how things are used as much as kind of intellectually how you might categorize them. And this bit is key. Use what you've already got. This process is not an excuse to go out and buy new boxes and bags and shelves. Like, you might be thinking the ideal way to deal with this is like transparent boxes so that I can see exactly where things are, and it helps if they have lids because then things won't get dusty. And that may be the ideal, but this is not the time to bring in more stuff. That is not the goal with this. Use for now what you've already got in your home, whether that's battered old supermarket bags, whether it's kind of plastic boxes that have a big crack down the side. At the very end point, when you feel like you're pretty much there, is when you can start looking at whether you need new boxes or containers or shelves. Until then, and I am telling myself this as much as I'm telling you, stop buying containers. At this stage in dehoarding, you don't know what storage you will need at the end, because you don't have an organization problem, you have a hoarding problem, you have a quantity problem. And so buying new shelves, boxes, is just bringing in more clutter at this stage, because you don't know in 12 months' time, when your house may look quite different, exactly what will need to be stored, how much of it, and where. So please try and resist new containers. And so hopefully that provides a bit of a pathway as to how to make decisions about what to keep when you're looking at miscellaneous items, and also how you can start thinking about how they might be organized. Because it's difficult, it's quite easy to say all pairs of jeans live together. It's quite hard to know what to do with the stuff in a box that contains your next door neighbour's spare keys, some toaster pockets that you can make a toasted sandwich in, vouchers, a letter you have to post, a load of postage stamps, a hairband. You know, that it's impossible. But if you can follow this pathway, think themes, put things together, like with like, within a theme, get rid of duplicates, and then think, where does it make the most sense for things in this grouping to live? Then hopefully that will help you to go through that process. And then when you next need a hairband, you'll be able to think through that same train of thoughts and get to the place where your hairbands now live. So once in a while, I ask listeners if they want to send me in their hoarding secrets. And I am so touched and flattered every time somebody does, because I am always clear that they are to be read out on the podcast. And I know, you know, I'm 97 episodes in. I know that telling people your secrets is a really hard thing. I do it every week on this podcast, and it's tough, but it's also quite liberating. And every time somebody sends me their secret, I'm so honored that they're trusting me with it. And so this person said, I need help to achieve my goals, but I am too embarrassed to book a tradesman or cleaner. My bedroom is a hotspot with boxes, etc. stacked in front of the window. I can't get to the window, and from outside I can see black mould growing on the woodwork and blind. It's been growing for many years. I have worked hard on decluttering my main living space and ordered new curtains. Help cleaning these windows ahead of the new curtains being hung would be appreciated. But a window cleaner would need to walk around the back and past the mouldy window. So I add the window cleaning to my to-do list. I focused on and sorted my ensuite about 4 months ago. I even filled in the gaps and cracks. They are coming back because my exhaust fan has been broken for around 2 years. I don't get it fixed because I would be too embarrassed to have a tradie walk through my bedroom. I am working on myself and addressing my underlying mental triggers, and need to also work with my kids and challenge their thoughts. My son wants to keep everything. I have discovered he is saving long toenails in his baby container meant for a lock of his baby hair. My daughter will give things away, but gets into collecting fads and has to spend her money quickly. At the moment, she thinks every squishmallow is rare and has bought around 15 of these toys and begs me to buy more every time we go to the shops. Well, these are some of my secret challenges, but despite these, I am making gradual progress in the right direction. Last night, I threw the kids' bath toys in the bin because I am sick of constantly picking them up off the floor. My new plan is to give the kids several chances with verbal instructions to clean up and put away their things. And if they don't, I'm going to be binning things like the free McDonald's toys. I am off now to rinse the mold cleaner off my shower and to scrub the glass with Jif while I take a shower. I am pushing back at that 97% relapse figure, which I'm glad to hear you found no tangible evidence to back up. All the best with your journey too. We can do this. So firstly, thank you so much for sharing your secret with me. It sounds like you are doing well in the face of difficult challenges. Dehoarding is such a mammoth task. I think people think it's a matter of blitzing and it being done, whereas in fact it requires systematic and ongoing efforts that are hard. It's hard. And so the fact that you're making progress, the fact that you're setting new boundaries with your children, the fact that you did get rid of the bath toys because you're sick of picking them up, that is all amazing. And, you know, your ensuite, all really, really good. Really good. Take a moment. We can do this. You're so right. Take a moment to appreciate that. The thing about being too embarrassed to book a cleaner or a tradie, oh, I get that. I get tied up in, like, in logistics. In order to do this, I need to do that first. But to do that first, I need to do this before that. And in order to get that done, I have to move this. And I just shut down. I can't work it out. And it sounds like you're in a bit of a similar situation. I need someone to clean the window, but until I've done this, I can't clean the window, but I can't do that until, you know, it's hard. Something that's helping me with that is I kind of look at what needs to be done in that way. I want to access that. And in order to access that, I need to move that box. And in order to move that box, I need to make space here. And in order to make space here, I need to, you know that inner conversation, I'm sure. And what's helping is I kind of look at that and register it, but then literally just start in front of where I am. If I'm sitting in a chair, I start with what's in front of me. If I'm wandering around, I start with what's in front of me. Because all of it needs to be done. And if I can't do this until I've done that, but I can't do that until I've done this, starts tripping you up. Try and kind of step out of that and just go, you know what, it will all help ultimately. So I'm going to do this bit because it's annoying me, or I'm going to do this bit because it's right there. It will get you there. Now, I'm sure you know better than me that black mold is not good. Black mold is, I'm no expert, but I hear it's bad to be breathing in. So anything you can do in the meantime to help with that would be good. I don't know whether things like opening the window more, making sure it's well ventilated can help. I would certainly try and prioritize the steps that need to be taken in order to get that sorted. Don't worry about the curtains yet. Don't worry about anything like that. Look at what needs to be done and start in front of you. And if you have a choice of things to do, which I suspect you do, go with the bits that will get you towards dealing with that mold. But you know what? You've got this. Let's push back against that 97% relapse figure together, because we can do it. If you are listening and you also want to send me your hoarding secret, you can do so completely anonymously. I have no idea who the person is who sends them in, at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/secret. Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So my top tip this week is a mini clip from the Clutter Free Academy podcast, which I will link to in the show notes. And Kathy Lipp, the host of the podcast, has a guest on called Cherie Gregory. And have a listen to this.
I used to think that I can fix it meant I will fix it. And I now realize that when somebody says I can fix it, it means I am capable of fixing it, so you must keep it forever.
Yes.
And that's when I realized I'm going to set a time limit. And I will confess, my counselor helped me come to that conclusion that I would set a time limit. Because at some point, it's not honest to keep saying, I could fix that, I can fix that, if the generalized meaning is I will, because that list gets longer and longer. Of course, I could do all sorts of things in my life, but it doesn't mean I have the time in which to do it.
I mean, it's so true, isn't it? Just because we're capable of fixing something, we have to ask one question further and say, yeah, but will I fix it? And if the answer is no, that tells us something about whether to keep an item or not. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.